Now, here's Mike Buck and Duke Iona on News Radio 830 KHVH.
Well, hello there. It's a rousy, beautiful Monday afternoon. It's still 82 degrees in Honolulu, 88, 89 degrees in Kona. Summer is here. So the lieutenant governor is wearing a brand new lava and coconut hat. No, wait. No, wait. It's his gold ensemble today. Long sleeve shirt. And, you know, that's the thing.
You're funny.
You know, you actually, and it should come as no surprise because as a member of the judiciary, you always have to get dressed up.
Well, you don't have to get.
Coat and tie?
Well, I'd call it the respect for the
for the
bench.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, so attorneys and the bench. You guys get used to it.
Yeah, the attorneys have to wear a coat and tie.
Yeah, how come?
That's just the decorum.
Is that the rules?
That's the rules, yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't have a problem with that because I like wearing coats and ties sometimes.
Sometimes, right.
But I like having the option. And I guess shoes are necessary, too. That's why I'd never be a good attorney or judge. Anyway, happy summer.
Same to you.
Yeah. I want to start off.
You sure
off
it's only 82, by the way?
It's hot.
It's hot. The humidity must be up there. Okay.
Okay. I need to start off with something that I wanted to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
And we have on the front page of the paper, once again, we're looking at this drug testing for teachers being on the front page again. Now, there seems to be a question about funding. And I asked you off the air a little bit about it. But I think maybe... And what you started to explain to me made an awful lot of sense. Why is this a surprise now?
That's the surprise. Yeah. I don't know why it is a surprise. When you negotiate a contract, especially one of this nature, you would assume that the cost of something like this would not be an issue. But obviously, it became an issue because some of the teachers, some of the union officials didn't like what occurred. And but you know, the contract was ratified, the contract was adopted, and it's a provision within the contract that drug testing be conducted by the Department of Education. So the burden is on the Department of Education to conduct the drug testing, and that's where the burden lies, and that's mm-hmm. where the expense lies, according to me.
BOE.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, now, that being said, you were looking at it from just a contractual standpoint. You said you didn't have a chance to look at the specific contract, but this is how contracts work.
Normally work. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, again, I can't comment on it because it might end up in the courtroom. I'm not sure. And if it does, then we will all know the correct interpretation of the contract. But, you know, and I'm sure a lot of businessmen out there go through the same thing. You also, I mean, even as consumers, you go through contracts like this.
Sure.
And these basic terms and provisions, you ask these basic questions. And again, like I said, the burden's on the Department of Education to conduct these tests of their employees, or Board of Education to conduct these tests of their employees. So the burden lies with them. And along with that goes the expense of the burden. So, you know, in my mind, it's the board that has the burden of financing it, if that's what it comes down to. They're making it an issue.
Let's talk about the big picture. Let's talk about money in general. We go along seemingly every time we need more money for the state, we put up taxes, we charge more fees, we do whatever mm-hmm. we do to make ends meet. And I know that it's a very difficult juggling act that the administration has to go through at the state level, at the city level, every time to come up with a budget. Now, with obviously the economy tightening its belt around us, there are a lot of things that aren't going to be taken care of the way we thought. I mean, just plain bricks and mortar, basic maintenance. I mean, there are a lot of things that have been spoken for, legislated, but that will not be funded.
Right.
But must be a nightmare looking at this stuff.
Well, you know, it's we call it just prudent fiscal management.
Yep.
That's what we call it. And as you know, the governor has imposed, in addition to what the legislature did, they posed a 4% restriction, and that came in through the budget.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, the governor has requested that all departments also impose a 4% discretionary restriction on their funds for their individual departments. So what that does is it poses a challenge for our directors, and that means they have to be a little more creative. They're going to have to do a little more consolidation, much like this energy issue that we're having right now, this energy challenge that we're having with gas, mm-hmm. is doing to many of us right now. So instead of making two trips, we make one trip. Instead of driving alone, we carpool. Instead of driving on weekends, we might stay home. Instead of driving to work 5 days a week, we catch the bus. And likewise, that's what we're going to have to do. So it's just a matter of that, Mike. Just good management.
You know, any family that does this as a family, that budgets, knows, okay, Dad just lost his job. Let's get together and chat for a while. Until Dad gets a new job, we might have to not do with a few things.
Right.
I mean, because there is no way that a family can change its financial position without finding more money. Until you find more money, you got to spend less. Mm-hmm. Isn't that exactly the same on a bigger picture?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no difference.
There's no difference, yeah. No.
I mean, I think what happens is, we get used to, I mean, really used to, having everything done by the government.
That's what you call dependence, yeah. And that's what we don't want to be.
Yeah.
I think I gave you that model once about the Athenian analysis. This was done in 1787, by the way, by a professor from Edinburgh. And they were discussing the evolution of democracy. And back then, you had very few democracies,
sure.
except for, you know, basically Greece and Rome and whatnot. So the cycle of a democracy, and listen to this, it goes from basically from bondage to spiritual faith. From spiritual faith to courage. From courage to abundance, which is basically democracy at that point in time. From abundance, wealth, to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, and then from dependence back to bondage again.
Yeah, so there you go.
That's basically
down.
The cycle. And
the bell curve.
Exactly. At that point, and what it said was there was really no democracy that lasted more than a couple of hundred years.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about it, you know, you think about modern-day democracies.
Ours
model,
is a couple of hundred years
this,
old.
Yeah, this model is, because where would you put us on that scale?
Mm-hmm.
Where would you put us as far as apathetic, complacency, dependency? I think we're pretty much.
I think it's all three.
Exactly, and so we don't want to be dependent, and that's kind of where we're. It looks like we're headed at times, except for, you know, the federal government can print money.
Mm-hmm.
We know they can print money, but.
Yeah.
I'm being a little facetious with that. But the bottom line, you're right. Like, it's like any other budget. You have a certain amount of revenue. And you got expenses,
mm-hmm.
and your revenues and your expenses, if they're not equal, or if your revenue is not more than your expenses, you're in trouble.
But you know what I think is an interesting observation is, because I saw this too. I saw yesterday, just happened to be on the History Channel, this thing about the pyramids, how they were made, how in the world did these people do this, and how some of them got destroyed because the king was no good and all of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is, 4,500 years later, they're still looking at some of these, and they still don't know the answers. Now, the scenario you're just talking about was looking at a specific democracy. But I think so goes our democracy, so goes the world.
Absolutely.
The entire planet is involved in the same complacency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because look at the trickle-down effect. Our biggest supplier is now owning us. China is starting to buy us. But that's because we consume the goods.
Mm-hmm.
As our money dries up, I don't care how much the stuff is going to be, we're still not going to buy it.
Yeah.
You know,
So
I mean, doesn't it stand to reason that globally we have to tighten the belt?
Oh, absolutely. You know? I mean, there's no question about that. And you hit it right on the head as far as when it comes to energy, with what's part of the reason why the cost is being driven up is because of what's happening over in China and India. And they have the resources for that. And when I say the resources, they have the money for it. So that's part of the problem that we have right now, and we're definitely going to have to curb that. But I don't know if you're aware that in today's Wall Street Journal there was a beautiful article about Hawaii and how, well, it says that we are now becoming the incubator of renewable energy, but in reality we've always been the incubator of renewable energy.
Our opportunity here is limitless.
Oh,
yeah.
It is in every regard. So we're going to set a model. This is something I think I mentioned before, but if you go back in history and you look in the 70s and you look at what happened when we had this energy crisis in the 70s, which was for a different reason,
mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, the same effect that we had back then is happening now. What we failed to do back then was to follow through on policies and just being bold in what we needed to do. As a state, we did that. We failed to do that. And I think as a nation, in, as a whole, we did. In the, some individual states did. They followed through on policy. They knew that they didn't want to get in that same crisis again when it came to fuel and energy and be dependent on the Middle East and the oil and the prices that they were hijacking at that point in time. So they went and they did what they needed to do to find alternative sources of energy. Not, albeit maybe not the best, but not clean and renewable, but they found alternative sources of energy. Now, this is our golden opportunity right now to become the model for everything, because we have it all right here. As,
yeah,
as
we got
we've
wind,
talking
we got,
about it. Yeah.
We got the tides, we got the solar. I mean, you know, we got it all, including a traffic report. And by the way, if you'd like to join the conversation, particularly about that something positive, which is like, can we become the model for the world, certainly for our country. Okie dokie, Monday afternoon on our primetime podcast hour. Jump in to talk stories with Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona and me. 521-8383 is the number. 1-888-565-8383 from the neighborhood. A couple things we want to cover in addition to, we got some more stuff on drugs. We got some more stuff on this. Today, the Sheriff's Department went in and cleaned up after giving eviction notice to some people under the H-1. You know, drugs, copper wire, theft, crime, homelessness, and everything else. When we start talking about looking at the big picture and our opportunity, we have opportunities in more than that area, more than the energy area, because we also have a growing concern with this homelessness situation. And because of the visibility of the homeless here, I mean, tourists see them in Alamoana Beach Park on their way to their hotels. They see them on Nimitz when they're coming in on the highway. We also have an opportunity there, and we've just extended, the governor just extended some benefits to the people out in the Leeward Coast. Let's talk about, it's not just stepping up. It's a matter of, hey, these are our people. These are, you know, albeit some with problems, but it's part of a much bigger picture, and it all goes back to what you were telling me about the kids and drugs, because if we get the kids, they won't end up homeless and drugs.
Absolutely. You know, I've said that before. It's easier to build strong children than it is to fix a broken adult, and we know that. You know that. Everybody knows that, and that's where we need to have a greater emphasis and a shift in culture. We took SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration for the U.S. Department of Human Services, took a survey. Every year they take a survey. It's called the Household Survey.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some results here that I find very interesting. This is for the state of Hawaii. So they go to every state and do these surveys. This is the 2005-2006 national survey on drugs and drugs and alcohol. And these are the three specific questions that they asked children between the ages of 12 and 17. They asked them, what is your perception, what's the perception of how great the risk of smoking marijuana once a month is? What's the perception of that? How great of a risk is it? And 32% of our kids said that smoking marijuana once a month is a great risk, 32%. They asked the same question for drinking five or more drinks once or twice a week. Now, that's what we call binge drinking, okay? So what's their perception of how great of a risk drinking five or more drinks once or twice per week is? And our students ages 12 to 17 said only 41% said it was a great risk. Then they asked them, what's your perception of how great is the risk of smoking one or more packs of cigarettes per day? Per day. How great of a risk is this? 70% said it was a great risk.
So they get the cigarette risk.
They get the cigarette.
They get it.
Right. But they don't get the drinking and they don't get the marijuana. And the reason for that, is obvious, I would hope, to a lot of people. And that's because of our attitude towards alcohol and marijuana. But more importantly, as you well know, we've had a tremendous emphasis on tobacco in the last 4, 5, 6 years.
Right.
And as a result of that, you see the legislation we have right now, the ban on smoking. And that was a cultural shift, as you well know. And I used to smoke myself. 30 years ago, nobody would ever have thought that we would be where we are right now in regards to the ban on smoking in public places. But here we are. And that's because we put this great emphasis. We sued the tobacco companies, right? Everybody thought, how dumb of a lawsuit is that? Duh, doesn't everybody know that cigarette smoking can harm you, can kill you? Well, apparently, not everyone knew. Mm-hmm. Neither did a jury, and they awarded one of the biggest awards in the history of the United States against a product. And it all boils down to that, Mike. The way I look at it, I mean, these numbers, they're incredible.
One thing that question off the air, and I got, we're going to switch gears and go back to another subject here in a second. But one question was, how come the use of sampling on the marijuana was so low in comparison to the alcohol and tobacco? Because once one joint a month, if somebody smokes dope, they don't smoke one joint a month. They smoke one joint a day.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that question was asked.
No wonder the risk was so low, because, I mean, that's like non-using almost.
Well, come on. I mean, you know, it's okay. Anyway.
Okay, let's go back, though, to something else. We're talking about energy. Let's go to Matthew in Hawaii, Kai. Hello, Matthew.
Aloha, Mike. How you doing?
Very well.
I just want to say I thought you were right on about our potential here in Hawaii with the future of energy. And, you know, a lot of people feel like it has to go all the way to legislation in order to make a difference. But I think one thing that Hawaii has going for itself is the entrepreneurship here. And, just wondering I think it can come from entrepreneurs and new technology coming out and people, you know, locals really making a difference and trying to get ourselves independent and cleaner. And I was wondering if you guys have any ideas of where that can come from, or...
Boy, you know what, Matthew? Yeah. I'll tell you how good a question that is, because there's a couple of things that I see working here. First of all, you're right. Entrepreneurship rules everything, and I'm sure LG's going to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where the government can come along is to reward the entrepreneurial spirit by creating long-term incentives and breaks on a continuing basis, like they already do have now, Lieutenant Governor, for solar and for anything else. No matter what anybody's going to do, they got to be given a credit for it.
Absolutely. That's just, it's called incentive. You know, just give them some incentives and they'll do the rest. But, you know, we have this thing that I just gave a little discussion, a little speech to the Maui Chamber of Commerce, and I wanted them to understand that good business and green business are synonymous, and that the businesses have an opportunity right now. And I think, like you just mentioned, and you said it so well, everyone has a role to play in where we go with energy efficiency from here on out. So, you know, the businesses stepping up and making their new facilities that much more self-sufficient. You've seen it. You see it. I see it almost every day when I go on the viaduct and I go past the Harley-Davidson Center. I see those solar panels. That's a business going green and making it fit right in with what he does. And he's obviously saving, as he stated, a lot of money right now and more so in the future when it's all said and done. But that's not even counting what he's contributing to the environment and an example that he's setting to other businesses. So,
yeah, Matthew, did you have any specific area in which you were particularly interested?
Well, my idea about energy is, and you know, the future of energy is that, you know, a lot of it is a change of lifestyle. And I guess part of it is that legislative action does need to be involved in it, because the zoning laws are often working against people actually using less energy. You know, farms are very, very far away from commercial areas and residential areas, and so these things need to be more integrated as a whole, but of course that involves the legislative aspect of society. So, you know, it's just like you said, it's a larger picture, and it can't be really grasped just by solar panels or just by hybrid cars, for example. You know, it's really a change of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point. Thank you very much for your call. Before we go off to the news, I think that what he's touched on something that we've talked about a lot, and that is, look at what you're talking about before, the Harley, the photovoltaic system. The photovoltaic system makes a lot of sense, but it's really expensive.
Yeah, it is.
So most people looking at that are going to say, you know what? I want to be green, but I don't want to have all the green coming out of just my wallet. I want, if I'm going to get off the grid, I want to be rewarded.
Right.
You know?
And then there is a tax incentive for that. Yeah. So there was a tax incentive that was of a benefit to that business. But again,
well, one entrepreneurial guy came up. I think it was it's called the Kumu Project, where you can start with photovoltaics, get the credit, and then each year add additional panels and get additional credits. In other words, don't put in the $30,000 thing right off the bat because you're only going to get one credit. Mm-hmm. But every year you can get an additional credit by expanding on your system. Makes a lot of sense.
We've had some legislation in regards to you talked about agriculture. We have some legislation. In fact, tomorrow we're going to be part of a bill signing ceremony in which we can get where the agriculture industry can get some loans, some very low interest government-backed loans for developing energy efficient either products or when I say products, of course,
crops
or developing something along those lines that are related to energy. So we're moving in that direction as far as legislation is concerned. But I understand what he's saying. He's saying it doesn't have to be, doesn't necessarily have to come from legislation. That's exactly what we're talking about. Yep. That's what I was talking about with these numbers also. So it's all in line.
Okay, let's go take a look at traffic and get some news updates as we continue with the LG. We're going to get back into some more stuff here in a minute. One of the things that I want to talk to LG about and get your opinion as well is some of this, some of the things that can be done at the state level to really take a look at what is the real problem here with illegal workers. Is it a real problem? If we got 35,000 people here, it's a real problem. I don't care if it's below the national statistical average. That's a lot of jobs. Especially when we're getting up 3.5% of state unemployment. But before we go into that, let's go back and talk energy a little bit more. Our friend Alan in Lanikai comes in like a homing pigeon, like a heat-seeking missile when we talk about energy. Alan, welcome to the program.
You bet.
What do you got?
Well, you put your finger right on it. Energy is my bag. And by the way, can I call you Duke?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, thank you so much for making your time available for Mike's program.
Thank you.
Real public service. Well, the basic point, a couple of points I wanted to make. Tax credits are great for getting people to get started in what at the time would be a new technology or one that's a little on the expensive side. One of the nice things about the new bill that the governor signed for solar water heaters is the fact that the present price of oil, solar will pay its own way easily. And by making it part of the home mortgage, that's an even better way to go. Because, you see, tax credits are, in effect, having your neighbor pay for your installation through the state tax system. And that's fine to get a technology started. But you can't go forever that way because then eventually the money's got to come out of the state's economy. So I'm using this new bill as a good example of the right way to take the next mature step because I understand that the tax credits will not apply when the solar water heater is built into your new house, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, good. So you get a brownie point there. Okay, but the other big point is the system, the electric system peaks in Hawaii. Peak about 45 minutes after sunset on light wind days. That means solar photovoltaic and windmills will do nothing to keep the lights on during the evening peak. This means you have to continue to build relatively conventional generating equipment to cover the peak. And two more points, and then I'll just end my discussion. Number one is I know it's politically incorrect, but it's the right thing to do for Oahu. The AES power plant out at Barbers Point was built for two units. All the coal handling structure is in place, ready to go. And coal is so much cheaper than oil. We ought to let AES, or suggest that AES, build their second 200-megawatt unit in their existing plant. Because that's the way you're going to keep the lights on during the evening peak. And the other point is, we're just talking to businessmen in Hilo. Well, how many people realize that the state is penalizing all the people on the Big Island for using geothermal, which, by the way, does keep the lights on during the evening peak. but they penalize it by charging them $678,000 a year royalty for using geothermal steam. If you give tax credits for solar water heaters, how come you punish people for using geothermal?
That's always been interesting to me. Alan, thanks for bringing it up. Thanks for your call. You know, and that's interesting because I know, Duke, that this has been looked at a lot of times. And it's like because it's a state resource, right? In other words, the government owns the steam or the rights.
Mm-hmm.
So they charge this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what do they do to earn the money?
Cause, I guess they call that royalties, like minerals.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing I've learned, Alan and Mike, in regards to this issue on energy, is that it's very complex.
Yep.
It's not something that's a very, it's not a simple issue. Many challenges, as you can see, many organizations involved in it who have an interest in it one way or another, whether it's in the environment, whether it's in the industry, you name it. There's not just one or two organizations or businesses that are interested in what's happening with energy. There's many organizations. So you're right about that. And that issue is something that we could spend days on talking about that that royalty fee that is being paid by Puna Geothermal.
Yeah, I don't think that it's all that much money. But I mean, you know, because I'm used to such bigger numbers than everything else we talk about now.
But
I'm just thinking, is that number is the thing broken? Because is that a tilt number?
No, I don't believe it is. In fact, if you speak to Puna Geothermal, they
probably want more.
Well, yeah, but exactly. And it's not prohibiting them from producing what they're producing right now and developing and delivering what they do right now. In fact, they're ready to expand also. So, but it's an issue. It's an issue that is not. That can always be, I guess, compromised and done better. And so that's something that we could talk about, like I said, for a long time.
Doesn't that figure in exactly dovetail into the big picture that we were talking about earlier, and that is the many different facets of energy that we happen to be sitting on here in Hawaii that we can, reverting back to what you were saying earlier, and that is being a model. Of efficiency and a model of not dependence, being dependent on fossil fuel.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, and Alan brought something out about wind and sun not being as reliable. That's a big issue when it comes to fuel production. And that's the reason why oil was so much in demand, because it's reliable,
it's there. Yeah.
And likewise with coal. But, you know, they have some environmental issues to them also. But I will tell you this, we just received this grant from the U.S. Department of Energy that's going to allow us the University of Hawaii, to develop a grid system on Maui that's gonna basically attempt to store the energy that's produced off peak hours through wind, and so that it could be delivered during on peak hours, so we don't waste that electricity. And that's the next step. The technology is there. Now it's a matter of putting it all together and then making it available on the grid. So
my advice is to build a really big battery.
Well, that's where they're making inroads. They're making inroads there. One of the things that they're doing through this.
Okay,
project.
I want to switch gears because I promised I would. I want to switch gears to not only the. The effort on the State Department this morning, the sheriffs, and getting to take a look at taking back some land that we've been lost to. I mean, criminal activity, homelessness is one thing. We wrapped it into the fact that the governor and the UA have extended benefits there. But I need to also take another look at things. As we look at this unemployment rate climbing up to 3.5%, which is way below the national average but still high for us here. One, I want to know if what an acceptable level, is there such a word as acceptable level of illegal workers? I mean, we need to look at this thing, and we need to look at the people that are hiring these folks.
You're absolutely right. In my mind, my answer to you, there is no acceptable level. And I think that's where we got a little bit of trouble and some challenges right now, because that might have been the attitude that we had. Of course, the magnitude of the problem is so much greater on the national level, especially on the mainland, because of what the borders that we have and how it was going.
Did they leak?
Yeah, and so, but it is a problem. And you would think in Hawaii, it'd be that much more difficult. to have a significant amount of illegal immigrants coming to Hawaii and working. But there needs to be a crackdown, and there will be a crackdown on this practice because
well,
we just can't have
it
here.
But if it said that there could be as many as 35,000, and we have a whole whopping 30 arrests, that leaves a lot to be desired with regard to enforcement.
I'm not sure of that number, but you're like I just said, one illegal worker is one too many, and we need to impose the law and sanction appropriately, and that's the bottom line.
You know, I've been looking, interestingly enough, at not only Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and many, many others of the conservative folks that are handling this issue on the mainland and talk radio shows. And this problem is a lot bigger in a lot of our metropolitan cities than it is in Hawaii. But everybody says the same way. They would stop coming if there weren't people willing to hire them. It's not the immigrants that should be blamed for the situation.
Yeah,
it's the people that are trying to underhand it under the table, pay somebody not what they're worth, but what they can get away with.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I mean by there's got to be a crackdown. There's got to be a crackdown on the businesses themselves. And again, you know, I just said this, and I'll say it again, is that part of the problems that we have right now in our economy can be traced to what I call principled leadership, where we don't have the leaders that we need, that we should have in office who have the right character, and as a result of that are doing what's right with their businesses. Everybody, they try to cook the books. They try to hide the books. They try to cut corners here, cut corners there. They're not completely honest in the products that they sell. The whole subprime industry that we have, the mortgage industry we have right now, it goes back again to what I would call principled leadership. People weren't doing the right thing. And as a result of that, look at the fallout. The fallout is humongous. It's not only just America. It's the whole world that's feeling this right now.
Yeah, all because people got jammed into mortgages they couldn't handle.
Absolutely. So it's the same thing here. So these businesses, we have to crack down on these businesses and make them understand that this is not going to be tolerated, plain and simple.
We got a traffic report coming up, but first let's go out to Bill in Kalihi. Hello, Bill.
Aloha, gentlemen. I had a firsthand experience with illegal aliens at my business, and it was because of the the rent-a-space going up in Kapolei. The guy came in and he just admitted it. Oh, yes, I'm illegal. I'm illegal. Well, get the hell out of my shop, basically, is what I said. And he did, and I couldn't believe it. He said, there's like 40 of us working on this job site. Well, what do you mean? In Hawaii, in Kapolei, you're working on a job site? You're all illegal aliens? Yes. I couldn't believe it. I was dumbfounded, and...
Just out of curiosity,
I want to reiterate that it is a big problem, and it's hitting us hard. It's taking jobs away from our people that are paying taxes, and we need to address it.
Out of curiosity, Bill, what caused the interaction between you and this fellow? How did you come to be? What kind of was he trying to do business with you? Whoops, I think we lost him. He was just making a statement.
Right.
You know, and what happens is it must be frustrating. You know, you see this going on, the guy says,
Yeah.
I mean, and then what? All right.
Well, I agree.
Oh, so sorry. I played the lieutenant governor just a little bit. You like my fireworks? just a reminder that I actually, without you, was doing a piece on the DLNR release on the channels that were going to be closed at Ala Moana and Hawaii Kai for the fireworks displays.
For 4th of July,
4th
right.
4th of July. And every year, we talk about this every year, this bunch of wing nuts that go out and do the wrong thing and blow each other up and hurt themselves. It's just terrible.
Well, you know, so we just got you talking about that, right?
Yep.
Doing what's right. So you got it.
Yeah, let's have them do this.
I was going to ask you if that recording was done at your house.
Yeah, I was going to say. No, you know what? But I think it is unbelievable. And I can remember as a kid where that expression... keeping up with the Joneses.
Uh-huh.
In some streets in Manoa, Kaimakea, you know, you name it, these guys like have competition to see who can waste more money the quickest.
They do. You're absolutely right. And you see it in Kalihi a lot too.
Yep.
And I see it out in Kapolei where I live.
Okay, let's get back to the business of doing business. 521-8383. Interesting, that guy was rubber banded about illegals. I'm wondering why it is so difficult to deal with them? Because aren't there so many ways and places here that you have to have ID? Do they just have their ID? Do they have phony ID? I mean, there was that one great group in Los Angeles where something like 10 or 12,000 people were using the same Social Security number.
You know, I'm not that educated yet on the specifics on how they work this. In other words, how they employ them, how they keep them, and how they sustain this illegal work product, if that's what you want
to
call it.
Yeah, most of it, I think, is cash.
I assume it's pretty much you probably got it in a lot of construction, construction industry, service industry maybe. But again, you know, this is something that is just one too many. This is something that we need to take a firmer grasp of, and of course have a more aggressive program in cracking down on this. And the sanctions have to be significant.
Yep.
They cannot be what I would call a slap on the wrist. It has to be meaningful, and it has to be a deterrent. I mean, first and foremost, it has to be a huge deterrent on business people so that they don't even think about it, let alone even do it, you know, and take the risk of doing it. So, you know, that's my position on it. And, of course, that's, you know, that's the policy that we will carry out.
Let's talk about another policy, and this one may be a little bit tougher because we've got a state hospital system that apparently is once again in precarious position, and there's once again jockeying for position, and the position is always about money.
Right.
And, you know, here we are looking at another way. How do you take money out of a bucket that doesn't have any money in? You know, so what are we going to do besides having these family meetings to tighten belts that we talked about early in the program today? We go right back to that. It's time to talk about cutting expenses somehow.
Are you talking about our Hawaii healthcare?
Yeah. I mean, what are we going to do about all these people that, once again, as you talked about, you underscored this early, have come to expect a certain level of treatment. In other words, to take things for granted that this is going to continue. Sometimes, based on the lack of revenues, things cannot continue.
You know, what's interesting, and I don't know how many people realize this, but the system for the Hawaii Health Systems Corporation was changed last year when the legislature enacted what they call regional boards. And the regional boards now, there's five different regional boards throughout the state.
Yeah, for the different counties or for the different areas.
Exactly. Well, Hilo has one. I believe Kona has one, and that's why you have five.
Yeah.
And they're responsible right now for the budgeting of their various community hospitals. And so what you're seeing right now is a fruit of these boards taking a very active and a very conscientious and serious role, responsibility in the role that they have to play for their hospitals. And so they're looking at how their hospitals are being run. And the way I see some of this is what they've come up with, that there's got to be some cuts.
Yeah.
There's got to be some real significant belt tightening. And so that means, as I just stated, there's got to be some maybe personnel cuts, maybe some cut in services or reduction in services to make their hospitals, one, more self-sustaining and efficient, but also to attract maybe the type of health care that they need in regards to the doctors and other providers out there. So, you know, we're monitoring this and seeing exactly how this goes. And I know the legislature is also, because this was something that, again, was adopted.
I think in times of plenty, this is not a concern. It made a whole lot of sense in times of plenty to do exactly what we're doing. When there was no question about funding.
That could be part of it,
but
too,
Look at how quickly this all turned around.
It did. You know? It did. And so you're going to see some real tough things happening with our community hospitals. Of course, first and foremost is always the care and treatment of our residents. And so, you know, we know that the community hospitals in many of these areas, that's all they got. But you can look at Maui, for instance, and what they're going through right now in regards to, and this is kind of what brought to light some of this controversy, where they wanted to build a private hospital, as you know, out on the east side of Maui, and they got shot down. And part of the reason they said was because they don't have the capacity out there for two hospitals.
Yeah, the population base.
Now that argument went both ways. But again, I think what it does is it highlights where we're at right now in this state with what the people want, what the communities want, and then how political leaders see it, and they see it differently. And so we're definitely going to have to come much, much more together on this to solve this health issue. And this is another issue that's very complex, and it has a lot of moving parts to it. And there's not a simple answer to it or solution to it.
Well, Colleen Hanabusa has, in effect, put a hammerlock and saying, hey, look, you know, if this thing doesn't get squared away, if it doesn't cut costs or if it doesn't get money, November is when it shuts down. What kind of a statement is that? I mean, first of all, wouldn't the state be in a horrendous position, be in a deep pocket, if somebody was refused treatment or if somebody closed down in an area in which I had a place and I expected that if there was an emergency, I'd be going over here or I'd be going over there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got to take another look at traffic before we say aloha to Lieutenant Governor. This one is being brought to you by our friends at Subway in that prime rib. Jason, what do you see?
812 starts slowing down after you pass the Kamehameha Highway overpass, ever bounding to IM1, a little freeway still back over the top of Red Hill. It's still a bit slow going and heavy going, ever bound Kokoi bound through town, beginning as you approach the Liliha overpass, ever bound traffic is clear. Your real-time traffic alerts straight to your wireless phone at sftraffic.net. At the City and County Honolulu Traffic Management Center, Jason Yotsuda for News Radio 830 KHBH.
When you want something special, like tender prime rib, then you want the new Subway prime rib sandwich. It's juicy, it's savory, it's our best cut of steak. Oh, and it's also fresh toasted, only at Subway restaurants. Come in today. Subway, eat fresh.
See some more fireworks.
Here you go.
So what kind of a 4th of July is coming up for the Lieutenant Governor?
Oh, very busy 4th of July. We got the Kailua Day Parade, as you well know, one of the best parades in the state. Then we go up to Kauai for they have their 4th of July celebration in the evening. And so we're going to take a tour of that. The next day, we're going to go to Makawao in Maui and do the Makawao 4th of July parade. Then they also have a veterans celebration following that. We'll be doing that. And then later that night, I'll be doing the installation of the Filipino Chamber of Commerce, their new officers. And the next day, we will celebrate the life of Kauai Mayor Brian Baptiste.
In other words, you get the weekend off.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a lot of motivating run.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that, you know, actually, and we've talked about this before, it goes with the territory. And I know that every now and again, I allow this because I think it's important. Where would you be without the people that help you with scheduling and say, hey, LG, you got to be here. This is the next deal. You got to be there. I mean, you know, you wake up in the morning and they say, here's the sketch.
Oh, I see.
Or you actually know the day before.
As you well know, it's the people in the bus that you got with you that do a great job. So my executive assistant, Viola Alipio, is just she's fantastic. I couldn't live without her, and she knows that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and I'll tell you, whenever anything's going wrong, I get the email from her, I get the phone call, it gets corroborated, it gets double checked. It must be nice to know that somebody's making sure that all the I's are dotted, all the T's are crossed.
Oh, you couldn't live without it. Yes, absolutely. And the rest of my staff also.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think they deserve a big raise.
I do too. They got it.
Okay, that being said, and even though it's a short week for some of us, things just keep going on. Well, that being said, and by the way, we are working on making these available, but this show is actually on your website, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is on my website. So if you chop into my website at www.hawaii.gov/LTGOV, you'll find it.
Easy enough. Okay, that's going to do us for now, and we're going to be back again next time with Lieutenant Governor.